Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves Podcast. You know, a lot of my early part of my career in this podcast was understanding the logistical parts of human behavior. And what I mean by that is attachment styles, boundaries, right? Like really understanding what are the literal ways that we organize our behaviors and what are the literal ways that we create separation between us and others. So what's the language we use? What's all of this, right? And I'm sure you have filled your mind full of these things. But I really think a lot of the healing is incomplete without the nervous system. And in a lot of ways, you can actually not have to know about any of those other things, although the skill set is necessary, the language is necessary to put words to what you're desiring to create the world that you desire. So I'm not minimizing the importance of that. And I think understanding things like attachment styles allows us to systemize our behavior, to make it make sense. Understanding narcissism, highly sensitive people, right? We all have all these frameworks that we discover and learn more about to try to make sense of ourselves. And yet, when you speak at the level of the nervous system in the language of the nervous system, the healing can happen so much more quickly. And the feeling happens. It's like the floodgates open within your body. So I say all of that because I have had a really deep desire to understand that more and more. And I think you do too. That's the information I keep getting from you who follow me on Instagram. And those of you who make comments in the podcast, please continue to do that. If you're watching on YouTube, sharing it there, is there's this deep desire to get done with the healing, right? Because we spend our lives, and I don't think healing is linear, and I don't think healing is, I think healing finishes. It's just that we still code growth as healing if we believe we're broken. So of course you're always going to need to learn more. You're always going to be able to become better. But you have to change how you orient to the problems that you have in your life. Not that it's evidence of your dysfunction or your low self-worth, but actually that you have an opportunity. And I think our challenges that we have in our life, both mental, emotional, and physiological, relationally, and physiologically, you know, relationships that we have with food, our blood chemistry, our pains in our bodies, these are all telling. There's that great book, The Body Keeps the Score. Our bodies are brilliant. This work begins with people like Louise Hay and The Molecules of Emotion, incredible book. Louise Hay's book, You Can Heal Your Life. Biology of Belief by Bruce Lipton. You Are the Placebo and many other books by Joe Dispenza. So really looking at this bridge between the nervous system, and as I spoke on a recent solo episode about that being the bridge to the etheric, I really believe that, and that the nervous system's relationship to our emotions and connection and relationship, but also our intuition and our gut. So with all that said, today's guest is about that. She is someone who reached ultimate fame and found her body falling apart. She almost died twice. The stories are crazy. She's going to tell them here today. And she was forced to learn about her body on a much deeper level and healing on a much deeper level. So I'm so excited for today's episode. It's with Ashley DiLello, and it's just so powerful. So get ready. Wherever you're listening to this podcast, please hit the subscribe button. That is one way you can support the show at no cost to you, and you don't miss any episodes. And that makes me, Trey's, happy, and you very happy too. So with that said, let's go. Here is today's episode.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves Podcast. Today I have Ashley DiLello. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Well, the reason I'm so pumped to have you on, I mean, a number of reasons, but the main is that I've seen how important healing
beyond just the logical or the linear or the verbal, or how important the nervous system is to incorporate in that. Mm-hmm. When I started learning about relationships and myself, the nervous system wasn't even a conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, that was 47 years ago. It was like 18 years ago that I started to ask these questions. But before that, I was a rep in pharma for 5 years, and the nervous system was no conversation about blood pressure or any like cardiac mm-hmm. metabolic syndrome, all the way through autoimmune, et cetera, mm-hmm. even though it is heavily
the commander, really, right. of our brain and our body and how they communicate.
So, mm-hmm. how did you become obsessed with it? Is that a fair assessment? Are you obsessed?
Yeah, I am. That's about the
not a
only,
dysregulated version of
yes, obsessed. A good passionate obsessed, right? Everyone says when you're passionate, you toe that line between obsession and insanity a little bit, right?
I know, I recognize that, yeah. I've been teetered.
Yes, yeah. We all have, right? I would say the brain is my love language, like truly.
That's the sixth
yeah.
love language.
Yes,
I like
it is
it.
The
I
brain.
Like
talk neuroscience to me.
Your husband knows. He's like, I got it.
Had to give him some study materials.
Like synapses. Listen, you're like, say more.
Yes, let's talk about neurotransmitters. I think it's like a lot of people, what brings you to your passion is your own pain, right? Your own journey. And literally, it saved my life, like quite literally. And so that's why I'm so passionate about it. And the only reason I came to it is because on my journey to heal my body, I ran out of options. Like I had two life-altering health experiences, and we'll go through that. One as a teenager and then later as an adult in my 30s. And I did everything possible this second time around. So I'm like, okay, I've done this. Now the world is so different. There's so many modalities and functional healing. And I did everything you can think of, all the biohacking, functional Eastern, regenerative, everything, and got to a place that honestly was one of the scariest moments of my life, and looked at my husband and I'm like, there's nothing left to try. Like we've tried everything for all these years. We're about to lose our home because you're just dumping money relentlessly to try to get your health back, because it truly is your greatest wealth. That it is the greatest gift in life, the thing that allows you to do everything. So thankfully, I also had a husband who's like, what do we need to do? But after doing that relentlessly, being so stressed financially, our life is so hard. I'm sleeping 2 to 3 hours a night in unrelenting chronic nerve pain, to a place where sometimes out of desperation, I would go and seek, because I had a bunch of surgeries and operations as well, and seek to think if I have a leftover OxyContin, will this at least help me sleep more than 2 hours tonight?
Wow.
And I'm a control person, which I'm very grateful for, because I have absolute empathy for people in chronic pain, how they get to that place of just trying to escape
constant,
relentless pain, right? But I was at a place where that felt like taking water, had no impact. And I remember the night, and I'm just sitting there like waiting for it to kick in, you know, rocking back and forth, because when you're in so much pain, you've got to move, you've got to do something, and nothing, and nothing, and nothing. And being to that degree of pain, I'd had over 200 injections of all the regenerative stem cell, like whatever you can think of, and there's nothing left to try, literally. And that was probably the hardest night of my life, which is saying something, because I fought for my life for 4 years when I was younger. But it was just this point of breaking in a way I'd never felt before. Like, I had been told I was going to die at 13, and that was that whole journey. And I literally refused to die, which really allowed me to start to see that intricate brain-body connection, because I would stay awake at night, too afraid to go to sleep. I felt like if I go to sleep and surrender that conscious will to live, my body's not going to make it. So I would stay awake and tell my body to keep fighting, keep fighting. And neuroscience wasn't around then either. That was 28 years ago. So the reason why I show that is the context. I literally was a teenage girl who was sent home to die, fought for my life for 4 years, and refused to die. Like, I am going to live. To now fast forward, I'm going through this chronic pain journey, and I'm ready. I'm like, God, you can take me.
Wow. So you've actually resigned.
To get to that point scared me more than anything else, because of who I had been my entire life. Like, I can tell you as a teenager, if I had given up that will, like we've seen with soldiers that are prisoner of war, they'll just go and sit down in a corner and give up that will to live. I was so sick. I could barely lift a finger. My skin was yellow from my liver shutting down. I could have said, all right, body, like you can give up the good fight, right? But I didn't because I was so passionate about living. So to get to a place where, like I said, the pain is relentless. Nothing is helping it. I can barely walk. I lost my capacity to do everything I loved. I can't even pick up my own daughter. My family's suffering tremendously. The financial strain is so huge. I don't know what else to do.
Yeah.
And I wasn't at a place, thankfully, of who I am to not take my own life, but to get to a place where I surrender my life scared me so much and opened up my heart to empathy for people who also get there.
Right.
Because
I understood it.
I hadn't experienced that to that degree. But because of that contrast, I remember sitting there. It was like 3 a.m. You know, I'm on my floor in fetal position, just writhing in pain. And I thought, I start going over what I'd been told, you know, I'm a chronic pain patient now. I was diagnosed with 5-6 different chronic pain conditions that are lifelong, right? No cure. Right. This is who you are now. It's downhill from here. And then I start thinking, what else has been said to me? You know, my brain's trying to cross reference. Like, I think I'm trying to find a lifeline, right? Yeah. Of some hope, notwithstanding the evidence before me of the last several years. And then I remember this common thing told to me, well, your nervous system flipped a switch into pain. That's what happens, right? Because chronic pain patients, and this is the same with like anxiety or panic, we don't all start that way,
right?
Yeah. Something happens in our life, and yes, you can have a traumatic experience that then tips it over the edge, but it's always a combination, right, of everything. And I had a failed hip surgery.
Yeah, like the toxic load.
That's right, yeah. And I had a failed hip surgery that started the whole journey, but wow. We'll go into all the other pieces of how I realized my nervous system. So I thought, okay, my nervous system flipped a switch into pain. They're telling me this is who I am now. Well, when I was younger, they said I was going to die and I had no hope of living. And I did that. So if the nervous system can flip into pain, there's got to be a way to flip it back. And that
this is like at the, you've resigned and now you're just like going through the Rolodex of like, is there a doorway?
Yep. And that's what I thought. Well, then I'm going to figure out how to flip it back. And that purpose now became my lifeline of when I couldn't sleep, I just study neuroscience. And this was 8 years ago too, before we were really talking about it as much.
Before Huberman became such a object of love.
Yes. Which, yeah. I must share. I'm like, guys, I knew who Andrew Huberman was before, like most of you, all right? Because I did, because I was seeking any information. And I did study a lot that were specific to pain, but then just the nervous system in general, because literally it's a stress response. It's alarm signals. So for me, it's pain. Others, it's autoimmune. Others, it's anxieties. Others, it's depression, right? And trauma's connected to that. But how those alarm bells register are unique to us and our life experiences and how we've been shaped and what our vulnerabilities are and so forth. And so I just started consuming information, which is the beauty of this age. You know, I thought, do I go back to school and get a neuroscience degree? But then I thought, I'm going to waste so much time studying stuff that is irrelevant to what I'm trying to understand. So what a gift I can go to all these science journals and books and podcasts, but I can literally read neuroscience journals like from sites. It's such a gift of information
today.
You can
learn everything about everything.
You can.
You can become a master.
You can. And that was my goal because my life depended on it. My family's life depended on it. And that's what I did. And then I became my own guinea pig of merging what I was learning with my lived experience of not just the pain, but being so sick and fighting for my life and really starting to realize, oh my gosh, I've got PTSD that I didn't even register from when I was fighting for my life for 4 years. Like I was just a fighter. I'm going to survive.
Who are you without that?
Yeah. And then I survived and I'm like, I want to live, you know, and I didn't ever really process what that was like for me to spend my teenage years.
Did anyone ever ask you?
I remember seeing one person in particular. It was, again, a very different world. The way that we talk about now in trauma and
back then you had to be suicidal to have your mental health paid attention to.
Right.
Yeah.
The only thing, it was interesting because I had to take on that fighter role because the first time the doctor came in and I was at one of the top pediatric hospitals in the country, they did every test scan you can think of at the time, all the blood work, you know, comes in, looks me in the eyes. I'm 13 years old, literally a few months earlier, I was the epitome of health, dancing 5 hours a day, just a 13-year-old teenage girl, loving life. You know, talk about your life taking a complete 180 of how did we get here?
Yeah, I want to know more. What happened?
Yes.
So tell me.
Okay.
Sorry, but he is sitting there with you.
Yes, so he comes in, and this was really the first time. I was told many times, but he comes in, and he looks me in the eyes, and he says, you need to accept you're not going to live.
Oh, my God.
Yep. Not going to live past your teenage years. I mean,
that's like way to be God.
Yeah.
You know, to attempt to be God.
Yes.
Which, of course, having worked in that industry, I saw how much one, you know, people are doing surgery and really deciding people's lives with their skill set, which I respect that and that's valuable.
Yep.
But the self is like, I am like on some level, like there's a predisposition, of course, for narcissism in those spaces, which thank God for narcissists who are surgeons because it's a valuable, I'm the person who saves everybody.
Yeah.
Awesome. Save me. Great. Right. So
I'm not devaluing it. I'm grateful because when they're needed, they're needed.
But I remember hearing Deepak Chopra say, believe the diagnosis, not the prognosis. Mm-hmm. But even the diagnosis, now when I think
I
about
will say
it,
that,
is
yeah.
even is, I think you had a stack of categories of how your symptoms, you know, pooled together to create a diagnosis that then, you know, and one, this is who I am is
exactly.
what becomes so many people. So he tells you that.
He tells me this, doesn't stop there, says, you need to accept.
This is months before you're dancing.
I'd been sick several months. I got sick so fast. I was, like I said, healthy, dancing 5 hours a day, 13 years old. And then I remember, because I was getting my braces on, which is a memorable day, right, for us all.
I like when they get taken off.
Yes.
But yeah, I hear you.
Super thrilled about getting them on. But I remember I was sitting in the chair.
You are excited. It's true.
And my elbows were, like, throbbing. And I remember, oh, weird. Maybe I've just held them weird, you know, in this, because you're in that chair for quite a long time. And I remember circulating my arms going, this is such a weird pain. But didn't really give any note to it, right? And then the next morning, I woke up and could hardly move. I had pain in every joint and muscle. I had like 104 degree temperature. I remember going to my mom's room and I'm like, I can't even do a plié, which is a really basic, you know, ballet move, right? Most people know what a plié is.
Can't do it, but I know what it is.
You know what it is. Yeah. I couldn't bend.
Thing, right? Where you just stand on your toes?
Actually, you plié into the ground. So you lower into the ground.
I don't know what it is.
It's okay.
Okay,
it's
so
all,
that's clear.
It's all good. Tomato, tomato.
But yeah, I appreciate your gentleness. So he tells you this.
Yes.
And then he says what?
And
I
then
keep interrupting
he says,
because
yes.
I'm so
no,
excited.
It's okay. Just he keeps going. You're not going to have children. You're not going to be able to ever dance again. And never get married. Like literally this long list.
Oh, he already decided you weren't a worthy bride.
Things I needed to accept because I wasn't going to make it there in terms of being alive.
Wow.
Right? And he says then the sooner you accept this, the easier it's going to be to come to terms with your reality.
He's a real motivational speaker.
Real motivational.
He must work for Tony Robbins these days.
You think about it, 13 years old, he's the expert. You know, I'm still a child, really.
You're terrified.
I felt like the wind had got knocked out. Like literally a million emotions at once. And also like disbelief, shock, overwhelm, fear, absolute devastation. You know, I lost the ability to do something I had done 5 hours a day since I was seven. Like passion of my life. I can't go to school. Like all these things, and it's all happening at once. And I remember just looking down and going, what do I do with this information? And I'm like, do I accept that I'm dying? And inside I'm like, I don't. So I don't know how. I took the biggest deep breath of my life and I looked at him and I said, I don't accept this. That was it. And with fear, but with absolute determination. I had no idea I could feel myself dying. I was scared, but I was also determined. And what's crazy, because you asked, did anybody ask me? After I said this, they sent in a psychologist to talk to me.
Oh, okay? To make sure you knew you were dying?
Right, right. To help me come to terms with my reality. And I remember, and this was a woman. She wasn't much better, so we're being equal here amongst the genders.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember looking at her and saying, I can feel I'm dying. Like, in fact, I can feel it more than any of you.
Yeah.
And I'm so scared, and I don't know how I'm going to get well, but I also feel, like, deep down inside, if I just accept I'm dying, then any chance of surviving this is gone.
I literally couldn't be more of a super fan of Cozy Earth products. Ever since the first day that Cozy Earth sheets graced my skin, and I don't say that as an exaggeration, I was staying at my sister-in-law's, I got in the bed, and I was like, what is happening? It was one of the most cozy, and I don't even mean the pun there, experiences I've ever had. You know that feeling when you're so comfortable in bed and you're just like, what is happening here? What are the ingredients that are making this experience? And so every single bed, every single house, every single rental I've ever been in always has Cozy Earth sheets. And if I gift them to people, oh my Lord. And now they're making pajamas. Are you kidding me? You're walking around with the same feeling. They've got joggers. All of it is next level, seriously. So not only do they make my home feel like a sanctuary, I bought these bamboo pajamas for my mom and my wife as Mother's Day gifts, and they are so excited about it. So if you're looking for a Mother's Day gift for a special mama, or you're just looking to treat yourself, because hey, yo, treat yourself, you want a cooler sleep, you want unmatched softness, you want everyday luxury of a premium loungewear, do not wait another day. Use the code MARK and you get 40% off these pajamas or any of their products. I mean, you probably want the sheets after I'm talking about them. Greatest Mother's Day gift. Take care of it. Check. You're going to thank me later. Go to markgroves.com/cozyearth and use the code MARK and you get 40% off.
And so instead of not trying to not die, I'm gonna try to live. And we're going to figure this out. And we walked out of that hospital. My mom and I.
Was she in the room this whole
time? She
was,
which I give so much credit to my mom. I would not be here without her. She's a fighter. She sought for answers. She too didn't just like, okay, well, you're dying. But what I credit my mom for, I know with every ounce of her soul, and now that I'm a mother, and my daughter's 10, so not very far off from when I got sick, my mom wanted to say the same thing and jump right in there. And she looked at me and she gave me space to respond, which I really credit because it gave me ownership of, even though I was a child and I was absolutely dependent on my parents to navigate this, right? And take me places and help me in every way possible. But it was also going to be my journey, right? It was had to be my journey of fighting and deciding and adhering, right, to nutrition or protocols. And it was like one of the greatest gifts my mom ever gave me was that moment where I really chose what was going to define me now the rest of my life, which was that no one got to define me. No diagnosis got to define me. I got to choose like who I was and what was possible. And I frankly, right, for me, I had a deep belief in God, which to me was nobody gets to then tell me what's possible for my life. If I believe in an unlimited God, then that capacity has to be within me. So I'm not going to just accept that, even if it looks like the mountain that I don't even know how I'm going to get to the top of. I'm never going to know if I don't try and open up to that belief, which now we understand and we have all the studies and we've seen it. But back then, it was just this deep belief that there was more for my life than 13 years of age.
What does that do from a neuroscience? Because you're saying there's the data. Because I think, okay, when you say that, I would imagine you're going into fight.
Absolutely.
Right. So your nervous system is activating, dumping glucose, like getting into action. Because even in that conversation, I'm sure your glucose goes up, you're in mobility, you're like nicely,
Right.
Because you've been raised well.
But sternly.
You're not like, F you, that's bullshit.
I did tell a few doctors.
Did you?
Yeah. I told them they could shove that where the sun didn't shine. Because I meant,
such a gracious way of telling someone to F off. I need to put that into my vernacular.
People didn't use that word as much back then,
it's
right?
So good. It's you know? Like, yeah. So what happens then when you leave this hospital and now the system has told you,
we have no answers.
Good luck.
You know, and I met some great doctors.
And do you have RA? What do you have?
The best, based on all the studies and tests we had, like this was the best like answer I received, was that I had a rare viral infection no one could diagnose or treat.
This is so common. It's like the Lyme, uh-huh. The fibromyalgia, yep. The chronic, yep. The, you know, insert, we have no clue. Although now you can go to a doctor and get all these viruses checked that are not checked in a regular,
totally different
allopathic
world,
yeah.
Right? Thankfully, back then, that didn't exist. Like, if you went to go see someone more holistic, first of all, there was no Google podcasts, social media. It was right. Yellow pages. It was referral. Yeah. And it was, back then, it was like voodoo. Like, you're going to someone who burns incense and has dreadlocks, right?
Right.
There wasn't functional doctors or practitioners that were widely accepted. It was it was a very different world 28 years ago. But after over 2.5 years of literally, I went to all the top hospitals across the country and no answers. They literally sent me home. Like, we don't know what to do, right? Like, we do not know what to do. And so that's when my family turn to what else can we do, right? And that's when we started to, what is everything possible we can do to support my immune system then to fight this virus, right? So back even then, before we were talking about it, food became so crucial. Like, what feeds my immune system?
So just superfood.
Superfood, real food, right?
So, sorry, real food is superfood.
Exactly, yeah. Right? Single ingredient, right? Just what, no sugar, no process, you know, little to no dairy, although, you know, there's better sources of dairy, but anything to help my immune system survive. Then we got into supplementation, which again was so weird then. Homeopathic medicine, you know, I started acupuncture, all these things that are very mainstream now, but didn't exist then. But then what happened with my mind, and you talk about the nervous system, I accessed it in a way that I didn't even know. I didn't even understand
what you were doing.
What I was doing. Yeah. I just had this strong will to live and this belief that my body had the capacity somehow, some way to overcome this, you know. And this is coming from a girl. Like I said, I got so sick. I lost most of my hair. I could barely lift a finger. I mean, from dancing 5 hours a day to needing help to go from my bed to the bathroom. Like,
did you have mold toxicity or something?
Who knows, right? It wasn't tested or looked at then.
That's not even a question.
No.
That you get.
And we were in the home was built when I was born, but, you know, I don't know, right? I'm sure there was a lot of compounding factors besides this just virus. Where I see such a huge impact, all that mattered. But then my will to live, right, I kept communicating to my body to keep fighting. You fight this virus. I would stay up and encourage it. We have the capacity. But then what saved me and then allowed me to have an amazing professional dance career after being out of it for 6 years, which you don't meet a professional athlete who was like, from age 14 to 20, I didn't do this.
I took a break.
But then I came back at 20.
I almost died.
Yeah.
And now
and
I'm
had success.
Amazing.
And this is how powerful beliefs are. Okay. So again, remember, I didn't know about neuroscience. We didn't have Huberman. We didn't have all the studies, the knowledge. I would have had to go to a library and check out, you know, and we couldn't do functional MRIs then either. So our understanding of the brain was super limited based upon autopsies when people already died. Right. So neuroscience has really just been the last 10 years, but beliefs dictate how the brain seeks evidence to validate that belief.
Yeah.
Right. So, and that's where, if we don't take conscious control of that, the belief every day was I'm dying. And there's evidence, ample evidence to point to that, right? My brain doesn't have to do any work to see that. And I'm being told it. But my belief, because I wanted to live so badly and wanted to get back to dance so badly, which is, it was devastating. It broke my heart to lose it, but it was a gift to have something I loved so much that I was like, no, I'm going to do that again. So I had this belief that was possible. Now, remember, beliefs tell the brain to find evidence. Well, that belief had no actual evidence in my life that that was ever possible. So what did the brain do? And this is what our brain does. I need to create intrinsic evidence. So no one has told me this at all. And I just remember one day being like, well, I'm going to start dancing in my mind. Mm. So all my MRIs and all my scans, and when I was up late at night, I would start dancing and I would see myself in class. I would go through technique and movement patterns to being on the stage, to competing. And I remember one time in particular, I was in an MRI machine and they actually stopped to talk to me because I was crying. And I remember the guy said, are you okay? Like, do you need something? Is something wrong? And I said, yeah, I'm okay. Like, these are happy tears, you know, which I'm sure he was like, okay, this little girl's like dying away. She's crying in the MRI machine. How are these happy tears? But I remember because I was seeing dance so clearly and feeling it that I was crying tears of gratitude and joy because it felt so real to me, which now we understand for the brain and nervous system really encode something as real. It has to have the emotion attached to it because that's the strongest impact of any experience in our life, right? The past has a lot of emotional charge. Our future has to have equally, if not more so, for the brain to say, oh my gosh, let me encode this as something that's actually happened. So that's what I did for 6 years.
Wow.
I had no, like, I didn't know I was wiring neural pathways as if this was happening.
This was gonna happen.
But it allowed me to not only feel empowered in these beliefs that I had that really was shared by no one, but maybe my family, right? But to tap into something that I loved and feel connected to it. Like there were times I did it and I would cry in sorrow and loss, right? But there were other times where I would just keep tapping into that possibility, which then I go back to dance. And it was a long journey, 4 years fighting for my life, 2 years to get enough strength back to go back to dance.
How do you start to resolve? Is it just the accumulation of
the brain work, step by step. Like I got to where I could walk, you know, easier from my bed to the bathroom. And
did you guys move in that time at all?
We traveled a lot, which then I was always traveling in a wheelchair because I didn't have strength, which also allowed me to gain empathy for how people look at you with pity. And people will understand this, something with health challenges is very often when your body's frail, people attach that to your frailty as a person.
Right.
And I remember sometimes just wanting to scream and be like, I might look weak and sick, but I am mighty. Like I am a warrior in here. Like I know you can't see me because I'm not standing in this power and strength, but like I promise you, like my spirit does not equal the weakness of my body, you know? And that's helped shape me, because I think it's just our inherent tendency. And I think it is often coming from nurturing and good and love. But I certainly learned to not underestimate someone's physical challenges with who they are inside. In fact, they have to rise all the more so. So we're traveling. I actually moved to Colorado. I found a practitioner there that he really was the most instrumental in saving my life through homeopathic medicine. I lived with my grandparents for 6 months straight, and then came every month for like 2 years to see him. And then he died right when I got well, which talk about like losing my safety net. Really, again, forced me to do some work to trust my body again.
Yeah, that it wasn't through him.
Only through him. Yeah, right. And I knew because I'd witnessed the power, but it was very nice to know I had this man when nobody else could help me that had believed in also my body's capacity to heal, and now he wasn't here. And that was so scary. It was like getting diagnosed again because I'm like, wait, I just got my health back. He's not here, which I see the gift and again forcing me to now step into this new identity of trusting my body.
And he stayed alive.
Yeah.
Till you got better.
I was the last patient he took, actually, if you want to just talk about beautiful divine timing.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, and my grandpa found him. My grandpa passed this year, which was, he was just, you know, he helped save my life. But I see the journey and how scary that was, but it really was so important in me stepping into now trusting my body. But subconsciously, I still didn't. And that's what then led us forward in, I went back to life, you know, and I didn't really deal with the trauma. Like to go, we kind of went full circle. No one really wasn't talking about it. And honestly, I have compassion. Sometimes we truly are in survival. I had right. such limited energy, literally, physically, mentally, emotionally. Like when you don't have enough energy to lift a finger or talk, you have very small resources. So yeah. it felt like I only have enough to fight and to not give up and to stay determined. Like I don't have enough to go and cry and be devastated and sit in my fear. And so because of that, I'll be honest, I wasn't super kind with myself when I wanted to do that. Like feel really sorry for myself, you know? In fact, if I had a hard day, I would tear myself down. Like, right. you don't have time for this. Your life is on the line, right?
Like, you're like an internalized David Goggins.
yes, actually. Yeah. Literally. Yeah. Which at the time, I also didn't understand that then that was just going to stay in my body, right?
Oh, the sort of...
The sorrow, the anger, the yeah. sadness, the fear.
The anger.
All of it, right? Yeah. The unbelievable
the lack of fairness,
loss.
You know, it's like,
yeah.
it's not fair. They're all fine. They yeah. didn't have to fight for their life.
Sure.
So when you go back to dance at this point, 6 years later.
6 years later. I'm now almost 20 years old. So I'm not even a kid. I'm a woman.
Well, you've become one anyways.
Yes.
Which
was weird too, because I felt like I was like an 80-year-old by nature yeah. of what I'd gone yeah. through. Just trying to
yeah.
like come back my senior year in high school even intermittently and be like, these aren't really big problems, guys, you know?
Yeah.
But having also understanding that they haven't gone through what I've gone through.
They have no concept of like what fighting for something
yeah.
is. Or yeah, when you hear someone complain, you're like, come
but
on.
But then I just, you but. Know, I had to then go to gratitude because I wanted to connect with my peers. Like yeah. I had been so isolated as a teenager.
And you didn't get to experience it.
Didn't get to experience it. No, my teenagers were fighting for my life. And so when I go back to dance, walking into that dance studio, all my peers, and I come from one of the best studios in the entire nation. They fed into also I Think You Can Dance and Dancing with the Stars. Like they're one of the best. And my main focus became ballroom, which is a competitive sport. And I had national champions, people top in the world in my studio, my peers. So I walk in at like almost 20. I'm like, I haven't danced in six yeah. years, you know? And talk about some courage, right?
Yeah.
To be like, I don't know what this is going to look like. And I know my first time wasn't fantastic, but what was crazy was so quickly my skill set came back and matched and exceeded some of my peers.
Wow.
Who had been dancing, I mean, we're talking 5-6 hours a day.
So do you think that was due to the
absolutely
5-10 hours you were doing reps?
I absolutely do. You know, and at yeah. the time, I didn't know. It didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And people would also be like, who's this girl? Why? Where did she come from? You know yeah. what I mean?
Sure, she almost died.
Yeah, right? Where yeah. has she been,
she's
really?
From Canada. You know? They snuck right. her in here.
Right.
Yeah.
And I remember that the time when people would ask me, you know, I worked really hard, right? So I matched physical execution with what I had done, but it made no sense. And I just like, God is blessing me because I can't make logical sense of this capacity. You know, and I didn't just go back to dance. I was also a student and my education was super important to me. So I was balancing both worlds. And honestly, if it came to dance or my academics, I always chose my academics, which was crazy. But I think it's because my brain was where I felt I had the most control.
Mm.
Right? Because my body
yeah.
dance was taken from me, but my brain was the one aspect that I had control over, which is, I think, why in part, even though I loved them equally, academics and dance, I gravitated toward the area that felt the one thing safest,
yeah,
right?
That makes sense.
So I would say, you know, God bless me because I don't know. It doesn't make sense. It really doesn't. But then you fast forward 10 years later when I'm going through my chronic pain journey and I'm studying neuroscience. And I just remember this moment going, oh my gosh.
Right.
For 6 years, I created these neural pathways. And then when I got back to dance, it was now just the execution of connections I had wired and felt. And why that made me so excited is although I'm a very my faith is very important to me, and it's helped me survive both experiences and believing in God and someone bigger than me. And there was a bigger purpose for my life, that I wasn't just sent here to die and sent here to suffer. But why I loved this so much is, well, when you say it's because of God or faith in God, there's a real like, well, then do I not have enough faith? Right. If I'm not getting well, if I'm not accomplishing what I want. Right.
God.
So am I failing? Am I not being good enough? Am I not having enough faith? Or then we get this, our mind starts to say, well, then he doesn't love me, or he's abandoned me. Yeah. Right. Which is also triggered, as you know, if we have abandonment wounds.
Yeah. God's abandoned me. God's now. My dad did.
That's right.
Now God did.
Right.
Sky Daddy.
And then there's this sense of like shame and guilt. Like, what's wrong with me? Why can't I heal? You know, I'm not doing good enough. Where now when I'm like, these are the mechanisms of the brain, which I believe we were all blessed with. Like, again, that goes to my faith. Like, God was like, you're all different. You're all going to struggle. You have different intellect, talents, gifts. But, like, I'm going to give you this incredible mechanism in your brain to really be this creator where you can create ahead of time. Like, you don't have to wait to experience something. And if you do it with repetition, which the law of neuroscience is repetition, right? If you want to change the brain, it has to be repeated, consistent enough to create a new pathway, but merged with that feeling, which now we've mapped and seen real, when you have brain-heart coherence, something magical happens in our nervous system. And again, that's not woo-woo. This is science.
It's all getting even more validated by the research Joe Dispenza is doing.
Absolutely.
And
we now know there's neurons in the heart. And that's part of this brain-heart coherence, is when that is aligned, then yes, there is this feeling that it's happened. Your nervous system encodes it. And why I love that and why I love the brain so much is, even now you might be listening to my story and we make ourselves the exception, or therefore make me the exception, or anyone where we've been inspired
but
by.
But not me.
But not me. She has this. She has that. I'm not this. I'm not that. And so I always tell my clients, like, but this is the greatest equalizer of our potential. Not just this one mechanism, but the brain in general. And I'm not talking about intelligence. I'm talking about its capacity to shape ourselves and our lives and our potential. We all have this, which makes me so passionate, because it really doesn't give you an out other than to not utilize it, right? And take this radical responsibility of this incredible organ that controls us, that communicates to the body through the nervous system. And it can become incredibly traumatized. Mine was, and we'll circle back to that, but it can change. Like, it can change. I was wired into pain and trauma and PTSD around my body and lack of trust with my body. So my brain was always on hypervigilance around my body. So I had a failed surgery. That's undeniable. The doctor left a hole in my hip that took, yes, I know.
Just like didn't tell you
half,
about it?
Yeah. That's a whole, yeah.
It's like, oh, there's a hole in your hip.
3.5 years to figure out, because it's not visible in an MRI. It was,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
They left a hole in your hip.
When you go and do the surgery I had, you have to go through the hip capsule, which used to be a full open surgery, but now they can do it laparoscopically.
Yeah.
But it's very complex because the hip is so deep in comparison to the knee or shoulder, right?
Makes sense.
So the surgery ended up, I believe, from what I've all known and seen, more complex than planned on, and in trying to close the hip capsule, it was unable to. So the structural integrity of my body was so incredibly altered. My brain knew it. The hip has the greatest ramification on the entire body because it's the biggest joint
everything.
And it connects the upper and lower
and I
body.
I think also the nervous system goes down into that bit, right?
That's right.
Like,
yep.
And that's where I remember hearing someone talk about, like, when our hips get really tight and stuff like that, like the connection to trauma and emotionality, which then I think of like pelvic floor and all the stuff, right? Which when people go, I don't know what's wrong. Well, did you have sexual trauma? Yeah. Oh, mystery. Like,
yeah.
But traditional medicine doesn't even explore a lot of this stuff.
So that was the linchpin, right?
Yeah.
Of something physically happened. And I think that's important, because I think sometimes people in my work go too far and they're like, everything's emotional.
Right.
And I'm like, but we're also humans, like, who get hurt, who get sick. Like, we are also humans, but that's where we can't just treat the emotions. We can't just treat the body. We have to treat the person, Yeah. Like, that's what it's about. That's what we need to merge. Like, oh, you could have gotten a virus. Oh, you had sexual trauma. There's an emotional impact. But also, like, you also got injured, and now that's a vulnerable spot in your body. Like, we have to treat the person. So that's, as I started studying pain science and neuroscience and how to rewire my nervous system, that's when I realized what we now understand. You have to look at it through that biopsychosocial lens of your whole life.
Right.
And that's when I realized. So new, but makes so much sense, right?
You can't, like, have you ever read the book Molecules of Emotion?
Yes.
And she was like, she's passed, but she was like the front, I believe she discovered one of the main receptors that really changed the game, maybe serotonin, I can't remember. But she was the one making this connection to like psychoneuroimmunology. Mm-hmm. And I believe that book was written in, I want to say like the 90s.
Yeah, ahead of all the research and like real embracing of that truth.
Louise Hay.
Yep.
I mean, she was telling these stories ages ago.
Yep. And yet it's still, because I go and speak at medical conferences, and it's still like it's starting to be accepted because
the
science.
Witch,
yes.
Yeah.
But in that, and then I'll circle back, I've said that to doctors. Medicine is also rooted in the placebo effect.
Right.
New drugs are rooted in the placebo effect.
And they crush.
And they crush.
The placebo crushes.
The placebo crushes. So I'm like, you have actual evidence of how important beliefs are in terms of outcome. Like, they create a physiological response. Like, someone in pain, you can give a medicine to, right? You could give maybe an OxyContin to, and they've done research where giving someone that within 5 minutes sometimes, they're like, oh, my pain feels so much better. That has not been broken down and distributed through the bloodstream yet. But there's that strong expectation. And it's not just belief, it's expectation. If I take this, it's going to create this outcome.
Which is what you were doing.
Right. And then the brain actually sends those chemical signatures to the body. It's no different than people who've had a panic attack. While they're alone in their room, nothing's happening in that moment, but you might be future projecting something. Yeah. You start encoding it as if it's really happening. The body starts responding as if it's happening in that moment. You start sweating, your heart races, you get a stomach ache, you might throw up. So the creative power is there. We just usually use it to our detriment, right? What's the worst case that could happen? Let's plan and prepare for it, because that's what the brain wants to do. We have that mechanism. We just have to learn how to say, what do we want?
Mm-hmm.
How do we start to create this and cultivate a belief in it, and then take micro steps toward that every day to start to build evidence to the brain that that's possible? But even before there's evidence outside of ourselves, let's start creating evidence inside ourselves. And that's studying all of this is I realized, okay, I had a failed surgery. But the way in which my body reacted so violently to this surgery, yes, I had a hole. It had to be structurally fixed. The brain knew. But the spreading of chronic pain throughout my body.
So from your hip, it became.
It was like every week.
Was it the same as your previous?
Totally different.
So your joints didn't all swell. You weren't.
It was nerve pain
and
dysfunction. Like, I couldn't walk. I struggled to walk, which makes sense. There was a hip, my whole spine would feel like it was on fire. If I looked down or up, my neck felt like it was going to break. I had just horrible pain in probably 12 areas of my body. I also had pelvic pain and bladder. I got diagnosed with interstitial cystitis, which is like people want to commit suicide. It's
that's the inflammation of the lining.
Yes,
of the bladder.
It is just like a hell that you just don't know what organs can do until you really get to know them. You know?
Wow. Yeah. Like, okay, there's a few things I wanted to say from what you were sharing. One, when I started to learn about, when I was a rep selling a product for irritable bowel syndrome, what you saw was that in a lot of the studies for products in that space, you'd get up to an 80% placebo response. Mm. And so the way to get a drug approved there is you had to create a significant difference between placebo and the drug. But it was wild to me to see like an 80%. So then how could we not logically then think there is a psychosomatic connection here? And then I remember reading Molecules of Emotion, and I forget what other book, but it then led me to Joe Dispenza's book, You Are the Placebo, where they talk about, and I'm sure I know you're very familiar with all this stuff, but like how you could do an ACL surgery. I think it was ACL, where they would tell people they did it,
uh-huh.
and they'd go through like a little camera, but it was playing a video of the surgery,
right.
and then actually doing them, and the recovery rates were the same or similar.
Right.
And I'm like, wow, even when the body thinks it's getting a surgery, it does the surgery.
The repair.
It's nuts. It's almost, I'm sure this was often just regular conversation in spiritual times, you know, when had like healers and and the medicine person and all that. But it makes so much sense that if I could sell you a drug or a surgery, I can't have you believe in the epic power of your mind, your body, your soul. And I say all that because, like, when I grew up Catholic, I rejected God as a concept because God had been weaponized in my experience and, like, connected to guilt and shame and all the things that, you know, everyone has experienced the spectrum of, regardless of religion.
Right.
But I had, that was like a moral leverage point that at school they used.
Mm.
And so I was like, you know what? Not interested. The world is science, you know, all that kind of stuff. But when I broke my leg at 25, I got a fat embolism in my lung.
Mm.
When they did a surgery, they put an intermedullary nail in my tibia, which was not necessary, but great sales rep, whoever got them to do it. And that pushed the bone marrow out and it showered into my lung and then I almost died. But I remember being in the hallway going to go get like a CT scan or something. And it was like 2 a.m. and I was by myself. And at the time I chewed tobacco, which it was the only choice I was making. Well, I still drank, but that wasn't culturally considered unhealthy.
Right.
But it was the only perceived choice that I made that was anti-life. Mm. And so it was very out of congruence for me. And I remember laying in that hallway and the doctor told me that there was a 40% chance of dying. And so I, like, in that moment was like, I'm not ready. And why am I making choices that can kill me faster?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's so anti-life, but it's, like, so disrespectful of the honor of this incarnation. And that, like, woke something in me of, like, I want to be alive. And when I made it through all that, it was, like, a couple of years later that I read Man's Search for Meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time I ever thought about there being more. Like, it was like and not only did I start to, I wouldn't have called it at that time God or divinity, or I would have called it universe because it was a safer word. It was easier. It wasn't connected.
Sure.
It didn't have all the associations from a neuroscience.
Yes, that matters.
Yeah, and what was really interesting is I started to write and I started to create with my hands. I'd never done any of these things. And I could feel my life just starting to expand in a way I would have never, even though I was living a great life before, the fullness of it became so much more palatable in hindsight. So I say all that because, like, I hear your journey and I'm just like, oh, you've put to words a lot of experiences I've had that I haven't heard put into those words, the repetition, the, you know, and it reminds me now, like, where am I at a repetition? Like, where is my mind creating my reality in a way that, like, I'm actually consenting to.
Right. Because that's what's important. And then there's this, I go through this with everyone. Then there's this sense of, like, but that's so much work, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Why can't I just feel good? Or why can't it just work for me? And I get that. I've been there myself.
Right.
It was not an easy experience, right, to change. And my clients, it's not for them either, although they at least have the path, right, which is the process I created. But I really try to do it in the same way, because when we want to be in physical shape, it's widely accepted. It's going to take repetition.
Right.
Like, and even if you're super diligent for 3 months and then you're like, I should be good now. Like, you're going to lose strength with time. You're going to lose endurance. And that's
losing the practice.
Yes, because your muscles continue need to be stressed, if you will, but worked. They need to have practice, right? And if we take ownership of that, like, okay, we understand that. The brain is no different. And in fact, it's so much more important just because it's the commander of all that we are. And it will always look to the past to make sense of the present, and especially the impactful parts of our past. So if we're not conscious of what that program is, our past will program it, other people will program it, social media will, the news, fear, the world, which we're exposed to in a way we were never designed to. So especially more than any time in history, like, you know, when you and I were growing up, you'd have to go get a magazine, right, to be exposed, or you'd have to watch the news to see what's happening in Lebanon or Africa. Yeah. That's right. Where the, my fingertips, I can see what's happening all over the world, not just in my community. So more than ever, our brain is being programmed all day, every day. If we're not taking radical stewardship over that, it's not just our past and traumas. It's the what's at our fingertips, right? Which we're seeing fear and dysregulation in a massive scale. And it's not just because everybody's been traumatized. It's because our we're not choosing for ourselves. If we're not conscious, if we're not quiet, if we're not paying attention, it becomes so habitual. We don't even question what that is. It's just us. It's just what we know. And then we're being told physically and emotionally with all these diagnoses, this is who we are. Like your anxiety, your depression. Well, this happened to you. So now for this is who you are. You are your autoimmune disease. You are a chronic pain patient. And I had to separate that. I was like, okay, I am in chronic pain at this moment. Because I can't live in denial of that, or I'm in constant suffering. Like, oh my gosh, I want this pain to go away, which I do. Yeah. And I've been there, but that constant resistance to reality just amplifies the brain's alarm bells, sends more stress hormones, reinforces the whole cycle, right? So we all have that. That's human to resist the things we don't want. But that differentiation was so important. Okay, this is my experience at this present moment, and I'm not ignorant that it's going to be a journey to change it, but it is not my identity because I am bigger than this experience. And that means I can also change it, because that's what we don't also really talk about enough with the brain. One of the strongest mechanisms in the brain is to keep you in alignment with who you say you are. Yeah. Or who the doctor says you are, or who society says you are. The brain is in charge of so much. It wants to do as much reflexively as possible. It's a predicting machine. So once I have this label of who I am, the brain's like, okay, now I know who I am, and I can just kind of reflexively run this program to keep you in alignment with that. So we have to understand how powerful that is. We have so many diagnoses now that truly become who we are, but they're telling our brain to stay there.
Right.
And if we're not conscious of separating that, this is my experience, this is what I'm going through at this moment, but I am more powerful than this, but only if I understand that and start to do the work to not only unravel the past, because we all have pieces of the past and belief systems that are contributing to the present, because the limbic system doesn't have a time clock. It can't it can't decipher past from present. It's greatest, strongest reference point. So the past is always coming to the present unconsciously. So if we don't go to the past, which I had to do my healing with my PTSD around my body and dying and trusting my body again, trusting life again, right? Because it was so altered. You're healthy, you're dying, right? You're healthy, the height of your career. Oh, you can't walk. You're in chronic pain.
That's wild. So at this point, you've had your daughter.
She was two.
You are dancing still.
Yep.
Your ballroom. You and your man.
Yep. We had done So You Think You Can Dance. Stage. Yes. Dancing with the Stars. We were Broadway.
So you're like,
we were at the height of our career.
And then all of a sudden,
overnight again, one surgery. And I'd had a hip surgery prior on my right hip that went well, took 8 months to come back, but I came back. So I thought the left would go the same way. And yeah, I went from my strongest physical self to deja vu, right? But now I can't walk. And
why did you think you had deterioration in your
hips? I did. I danced on Broadway for a year, like barely walking, and then going and doing 8 shows a week. And it was a combination of...
Oh, so you were just like...
I tore the labrum like completely off. And yes.
And kept dancing?
Kept dancing. You know,
your warrior might
but you
a little,
do what you, we were on the poster, you know, or the headline. You what you,
We
all sacrifice for what we love, right? But it did get to a point where I'm like, I might not walk the rest of my life. And part of it is genetic, but you don't do MRIs on babies. So I had an abnormally shaped femoral head, which is usually then on both sides.
Yeah.
So if I hadn't been a dancer, I might
you
not know,
known,
right?
Yeah.
If I wasn't hyperactive, but dancing, unlike sports, is the same movements over and over.
Especially ballroom,
and
aren't
over.
You doing like the yeah, and hippie 3-inch heels stuff and 3-inch heels?
All the crazy tricks and
they look great. Not great for your
amazing.
Back though, are they?
Back, hips, no, it's the whole body. I actually worked with the top physiotherapist in the UK. And he was like, dancers have the most wrecked bodies. Cause he also said, and he worked with the football team, you know, the soccer team for us Americans. He's like, they don't do 8 shows a week.
Yeah, they're practicing, but they're not trying to kill themselves. They're preparing themselves.
Right. We had 8 shows a week.
8 shows a
on
week?
On Broadway.
How
in
many
the West
on TV
End.
When you were doing TV?
So when we did So You Think You Can Dance, so my husband and I made it separately, competed against each other on the show. We had different partners because they choose that for you because you're going in and out of all the styles, which is why it's about how your diversity as a dancer. Like your ballroom dancer, can you do jazz? Can you do Broadway contemporary? So it really stretches you. We were, by the end, we both went to the finale. So I think it was like a 3.5 month journey. We were dancing 10, 12 hours a day. Like fingernails were pulling off. Cause you would, you know, this is once in a lifetime opportunity. Over 10,000 people auditioned our year. 10 girls make it, 10 boys make it.
Out of 10,000 people?
Yeah. It was crazy. So you do whatever. This is, you know, this is like the Olympics in terms of like
you prepare.
Is this
before
prepared.
You have your daughter?
Yes.
Wow.
But we were married.
Yeah. Did you meet dancing?
We did and through mutual friends.
Nice.
And
they're
danced.
Like, you guys are a couple dancers. You're both single.
Right. And it's funny. He'll tell about it. You want to talk about belief systems. My whole life was like, I'm not marrying a dancer. Mm-mm. Nope. Yeah. I'm not marrying a dancer.
He's like, I will get that dancer.
And so I had a lot of resistance. I couldn't help it though. We had so many other things that were important to me. In alignment. Yeah. A lot of ballroom dancers can end up with each other by nature of being partners.
That makes so much sense.
Whenever I
watch them dancing, I'm like, they're not married, they're gonna be. Like, there's too much intimacy happening here.
Yeah,
there's a lot of pheromones and stuff. There's a lot of hip shaking.
There is. Latin ballroom dancing, definitely. So I was like, we didn't dance together till after we got married. I actually didn't want dancing to have anything to do with it because I knew a marriage required a lot more than that. And that's
good boundaries.
That's a whole other story just because of what I grew up in and what I, you know, so we didn't even plan on this. You know, we married each other, which thank goodness because we lost our career.
Yeah.
You know, and if that, and we went through hell as a family.
How did you feel that, was there a perception or like you unconsciously or consciously taking on like we've lost it because of me?
It was very hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my husband still did shows like intermittent, but he also had to take on such a more caretaker role.
Yeah.
Right. And we were known as Ryan and Ashley, you know.
Not Ryan and.
Right. And so then people were asking us, but they wanted Ryan and Ashley. And, you know, it was different. It was so hard. That's something people don't talk about enough when somebody goes through tremendous health.
Yeah.
The guilt you feel.
And the shame.
And the shame for what your family goes along with you, not just financially. It's so huge, but all the roles they have to take on. Your life isn't going on vacation. Like our date nights weren't going and having fun. It was going to doctor's appointments. All our trips for 5 years were to see specialists.
Not to mention it's like, again, you're requiring, I'm guessing through God's divine intervention, to take up space.
Yeah.
Lots of space.
Lots of space.
And let yourself.
Yeah.
Like surrender to it. It's not optional.
So hard.
You are the focus.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that how much that was impacting my husband.
Yeah.
You know, because that dynamic does change. And you are so high maintenance in terms of your requirements for help. You know, my husband had to help me go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember that first time, like being like, man, I didn't think we'd do this till I was like really old. You know, I don't like needing help to get on and off the toilet, you know, and he had to step in a lot as mom. I couldn't lift my own daughter.
Yeah.
Our life changed. And so you're going through it. You lose the capacity to do what you love, which is why health issues, I believe, and I've seen with my work and my clients are some of the most traumatizing because you lose everything. I can't go get out my frustration by a run or a workout or by a hike or by dancing. It's all internal. I'm in my bed. I have no outlet of like physical expression. It's me. Like it's and only me. And my trauma isn't another person or something I can leave. It is the body I live in.
Yeah.
And it traumatizes me every day.
Right.
And then I get my hopes up.
Trauma, the painkillers aren't working.
That's right. And then you get your hopes up. Oh, I'm doing a little better. And then you move wrong or you do too much. And then it's like this payback and you're so traumatized and you have this unconscious, total lack of safety in your body, which means you have a lack of safety in the world.
Right, right. Which that is such an understated thing of, I'm not even safe in my body. My body, I can't even trust. If I can't trust my body, I can't trust anything because I don't even have access to the anchor.
Yep.
Which is like when I'm working with people and we're working on the process of saying no to things that don't align in their life, I always remind them, like, if you don't have access to that, you are not rooted in safety.
Right.
If you don't even have access to the knowing you can. So if you compromise, if you're a people pleaser, those are all perfectly normal adaptive strategies, but you have to find access to a boundary because if you don't, you are living in fear of a lack of protection from yourself.
Right.
And that's like, and you know, that's psychological, but it's literal because now your body is in places that it doesn't want to be.
Yep.
You know, and I've been thinking a lot lately, like it's better to say no to a yes than yes to a no.
Mm-hmm.
Because at least no to a yes informs you about what is positive for you,
right. what matters,
what
right?
you want to move towards.
Mm-hmm.
But yes to a no puts you in places you don't want to be in that, although you learn from it.
Sure.
yeah. It's like, so you're going through all of this. You're starting to study neuroscience. What did you get, so do you get corrective surgery and then the brain or what happens?
I started studying before, which I'm so grateful for. The surgery I had was a 2-year-plus recovery. It wasn't even an insurance code yet. There was 2 surgeons in the world who could do it.
The plug in the capsule?
I got an entire new structure of a capsule. It's now a surgical code. It wasn't then.
So they cut the top off and put
I have a cadaver graft and they reshape and like formulate a whole new capsule.
So they're like artists and surgeons.
Yeah. Dr. Philippon, who was the creator of it, I can't thank him enough. Like he was someone who saw issues and just kept searching for answers. So I've met a lot of awful doctors and surgeons, and I've met ones like him that, and he was so passionate. It was like this beautiful thing because he loved what he was doing, which is probably why he was so fantastic, you know? And he was looking for solutions rather than like band-aids. Like he cared so tremendously. So the good thing is I did do it before because I can tell you, I said to people prior, I will never get another surgery unless I'm dying. Because one surgery took my whole health away, my career away. Like how? I was strong. I was incredibly fit. I was also a trainer because I saw how amazing the human body was at getting strength back. And how can one surgery, right? And I went to a great surgeon. I did my research. They work with athletes. How can one surgery change my body to this effect of unbelievable pain and health issues? And so I meant it. I mean, that was trauma. That was, I'm not doing surgery again unless it's life or death. So if I hadn't done the work that I already did to heal my relationship to surgery, to my body, to reestablish trust while still living in hell, that's the hard part is, in order to heal, we have to establish that trust first, which, so it's like living in the trauma all day, every day, being triggered nonstop by your symptoms and establishing trust while your body is like, feels saying, like a punishment, right?
Yeah. Like your evidence is not trustworthy.
That's right.
It's not meeting the belief.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which is where one of the most important reframes was, it's not punishment, it's protection. Okay, protection from what? So what's going on physiologically? We've got to look at that. But what has gone on in your life to create a deeper alarm bell signal to maybe what's going on physically? Or maybe it's not at all. It's just now coming forth. Like we know the body keeps a score, right? Now it's just manifesting in physical symptoms because your brain is like, we got to deal with this. Like I've been holding on to this. You were traumatized. You know, you grew up in a hypervigilant nervous system because of your home. And like the stress is so profound and all these other things have happened into your life. We've got to deal with this or we're going to get really sick. So I'm going to start to get your attention through physical symptoms. I'm going to start to get your attention through panic attacks. I'm going to start to get to your attention to depression and shut you down. Like, that's what's so important, is they're all different in how they show up, but they're essentially all driven by these alarm bells in the nervous system. It's like a male client who had depression and was diagnosed with, you know, severe depression. And I remember talking to him, like, again, I'm not just going to look at you now. Let's talk about your life. Like, what are some significant experiences, you know? And he talks about this breakup and how from that moment, right, he saw himself different, life different, his potential different, which is what trauma is. It's anything that alters the brain to now be different, right? And I'm like, so are you depressed, or did you have these circumstances that then altered how your brain started to see yourself, your life, your lovability, your possibility? And now you're seeing through an absolute lack and limitation. Is that depressing? So are you depressed, or are the byproduct of what you went through creating now these thoughts that continue to wire and get stronger, and then they create an emotional signature that creates depression? But were you depressed prior to these series of events? Well, no. So then are you now identified and have to see yourself and your life through this lens of depression? Or do you think there's some things we can work at and heal and shift yourself back out of it? Right? And that's literally the truth with physical and emotional. And I'm not saying there's not real things.
Of course.
But the missing piece driving why we have this epidemic of chronic immune issues, autoimmune, chronic pain is the number one medical mystery in the world, because it's a brain issue more than even a body issue.
Right, exactly.
But also, why does everybody have anxiety and depression and trauma like never before, when we also talk about it like never before?
Right, it's never been more available.
That's right, and seen through compassion. Yeah. Where when we were growing up, it was like, buck up, buttercup, like, you know, like.
Right, like the David Goggins sort of approach.
Completely.
You know, which has a place.
It does.
And also, you know, like, we've never existed in a world where we've been available 24 hours a day for criticism, you know,
absolutely,
all the things. Like, not only smartphones, because they've obviously had a very integral part in that, but social media. I mean, it's like such an obvious.
Oh, man. Yeah. Like an orange, and someone's going to come at you for not saying you like apples, right?
Seriously.
Like, how
I could
dare
write
you?
Every qualifier in the world. And I had someone respond to an article I shared today on don't become your pain.
Yeah.
The idea of like moving out of victim mindset,
right,
and
right,
a concept that Carolyn Mace talks about called woundology. And they didn't even read the article. They're just like, people go through significant trauma and it's legitimate in these types of writings. I'm like, did you read it? Because in it, I talk about you can hold the complexity of the both end. It's actually necessary.
Absolutely.
You either get stuck in the, like, this is my life and my story, and it's, as you're talking about, that client you had, or I'm not even paying attention to it and all I'm going to do is rise. And it's like, no, you can rise from your victimization and still have been a victim.
Absolutely. Like, by definition, we've all been victims in one way or another, like, obviously to various forms. But like, I didn't choose to get sick, right? We didn't per se choose our parents, or we didn't choose for someone we love to hurt
culture,
us in that
the
way.
Country,
that's right. On a grand scale and a very individual scale. But, and you have to hold space for that. Absolutely. I couldn't have.
It's part of the healing process.
Yes. I couldn't have healed my nervous system without first giving myself permission to cry, to feel that fear, to be angry, right? Because I was like, I'm not an angry person. Well, but no, I was pretty ticked off at all that was asked of me twice, you know, to then be able to actually let it go instead of hold it in, and be able to then compassionately be like, you're not a robot. I don't care how tough or of a fighter you are. You're a human who has been hurt, who has been broken, but you don't want to be defined by that. So we compassionately allow the acknowledgement of it, to let it go, to then say, okay, what's the wisdom? Because I don't want to hold on to the wounds, because then it was for nothing. Like, really, if it's going to define me by the wounds the rest of my life, then I'm still in it. And so what is the wisdom? That doesn't discredit the unfairness. Like, I tell my clients, some things will never be okay. We're not saying this was all right. It happened. It was okay.
That's not healing.
That's not healing. I mean, there's many things that are never okay, never will be under any sense of the word definition. Even someone who was wounded hurt you. It's still not okay. It just helps us have understanding of why and that it was them and not you. Because we all take on that, well, it's because of me with everything that we go through, right? Because it helps us feel some sense of control. But if we don't process that out, then we stay there and then we don't get to rise and help others and now be a person who says, I was broken, but I rebuilt. Mm. And you can too, you know? And what I didn't understand is I hadn't processed that. You know, I was living my life, I was going on, but I got injured all the time in my career, which I absolutely believe was due to this hypervigilance in my brain to my body.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Oh, this constant monitoring. But I wasn't conscious of it. I wasn't afraid. I was living my life. I was like, I got to seize the day, you know? Yeah. I'm going to, my education and my dancing and let's travel and like, because life is a gift. But why am I getting hurt all the time? Why can't I really take a deep breath? Like, I'm a dancer. I'm like stretching. You would think I'm totally zen, but I remember telling my husband one time, like, I have this like buzzing, you know? And then I went through school like a perfectionist. Like I got, you know, I went on academic scholarship. I got my first A-, and I cried.
Wow.
Felt like a failure, which
I would have had a party.
I know. Yeah. It was embarrassing. Consciously, I knew this is ridiculous, right? And my major before I went to study neuroscience later was political science and history, which is all writing. It's all subjective. And I knew like some of my professors didn't believe in ACE because then they're like, well, then your writing's finished, right? Like you're on a journey.
Thank you for your philosophical A-.
But here's the fast forward. I didn't understand why it mattered so much for me to be perfect because it did. I was very hard on myself. I was very rigid. And I knew I was a high achiever, but we all know perfectionism is something different.
Yeah, you didn't know it was being sourced from like safety, self-worth.
Exactly.
All that kind of
so
stuff.
Then I'm like, why can't this change? I know consciously it's wrong. And I remember doing my work, right? As you do it and looking and doing the deeper pieces and going through my process. I remember one day my brain like finally told me, because I think it felt safe enough to. When you were told you were going to die and nobody gave you a chance, we needed to be perfect. Mm. You had to be the perfect patient. You had to be like, you know, and I didn't, but this is what my brain extracted, right? You have to have perfect faith, determination.
Take up less space too.
Resilience, yes. And then guess what? It worked. So now my safety is rooted in being perfect because if I'm not perfect, I'm going to die. Like that's what my brain is thinking, right? So I would have never consciously come up with that. Because I wasn't afraid of dying, but my brain was still operating.
Yeah, makes sense.
In that mechanism. Makes total sense. Anything we've survived, the brain now extracts protective mechanisms from, which are always stress mechanisms, right? If I worry enough, then I'm going to not be taken off guard, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be anxious all the time because then I can predict the worst case scenario and not have it just happen to me again, right? All of these are protection. So what I realized through my work and studying is there's modalities, but what's a process? Like there has to be a process of partnering with the brain nervous system, with the past to get your nervous system to neurologically acknowledge, have compassion, but let go and say, we're safe to do something different now.
Mm-hmm.
Even though your body's still here, even though your relationship is still here, even though your work, like we can do something different. And then that's the first part. And then now what can we create, right? You got to first get the nervous system to feel like, okay, I can let this go. Like I'm not going to forget it, but I don't need to operate there 24/7 in order to survive and be safe. Now let's harness the brain's capacity to create a new program of who we can be with the memory of the past, but not the wounds of the past. Mm. So the wisdom now can anchor in. And then we lead to our purpose, whether it's something like I've done or what you've done, or just our family, our community, like living more in alignment with who we are and connected to ourselves and being able to therefore connect to others because we're disconnected more than ever before. And so although my body and pain brought me to study the nervous system and my greatest challenges in life were my health, physical health, there's no physical health issues without profound mental and emotional and spiritual ramifications.
Yeah,
you have
100%.
To do both. You have to do both. And there's no outlet. I can't dance it out. I can't work it out. You have to go through both. And when putting the process together changed my life, I was like, this is what I've got to do.
What's it called?
Bio-emotional healing.
Bio-emotional healing.
So you've got emotion and the
branding. It's so good.
My husband helped me out there. We were talking about like, what do I call this? It's not just emotion in the body. It's also neuroscience. So we've got the biology, because I think we've also segmented them. Like, I'm a brain person. I'm a somatic body person. And to change the nervous system fully, because there's that constant feedback loop, brain to body, body to brain, you've got to do the brain and the body together.
Yeah.
And that's when real magic happens.
That must have been such a profound point to get to, where you're turning, I mean, literally your lifetime of suffering and success into, and all these things into a modality of like, this is what I always needed. Like, had someone just like walked me through this process, you could have saved yourself a lot of suffering.
Yeah.
But it's all, you know, it's like we were talking about earlier, that it's hard to, when you're in a rock bottom, when you're experiencing pain, when you go through a breakup, when you seem to keep attracting similar people, you get fired, your body shuts down. It's hard to trust in the divinity of that.
Absolutely.
Of course, because it's like, as you said earlier, does God hate me? Does it, you know, and it's, so Carolyn Mays talks about how like so much of the ways we abandon ourselves or, you know, don't, and she thinks of it more like the chakra system, which is so correlated to the nervous system.
Absolutely.
She talks about like, depending on the type of violation, we can begin to develop illness in those places.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, it's like such a, I now, like when I think about a responsibility of standing up for something or being in integrity or following a call, not a phone call, but like a call
call on your heart
from whatever.
Right. Something only you feel.
Yeah. My friend Kathy Heller says you're someone because you're some of the one.
Mm.
And it's like, I must answer that call or learn from the thing I've been through, because to not do that is to not be in integrity with the lessons that life has provided me.
Right.
And I immediately go, if I do not, it is the path to illness. And that's a level of accountability I want and have, because I'm like, I've seen this to be true. You know, I think we know trauma leads to often autoimmune.
Yep.
But you could just look at the Adverse Childhood Experiences study, which shows the more cumulative stress one experiences, the more likely they are to experience an autoimmune or many.
Many, yeah.
And it makes sense, because it's like at the core of these things, it's like a dysregulated nervous system that isn't allowing the body to do what it does, which is always move.
Yep.
So even the response your body is having is the body trying to get it out.
Right. And that was the most important paradigm shift that opened up the way. Like I said, it's not punishment. And so whether people feel physical symptoms or mental and emotional, right, anxiety, depression, it feels like punishment. My body's against me. My brain's against me. And it really is protection. Okay, protection from what? Let's start to do the work to unravel that. But I promise you, like, I hated my body. Because it felt like it took everything I loved away from me. But at the same time, I loved it because we were a team. Like, it was this constant, which people go through in relationships too. Like, I love them, I hate them, right? It was this dichotomy. But what changed and opened up the pathway for me to create this process was this huge shift of my brain and body are always fighting for me. Not against me, for me. But what is really the only way they get our attention?
Right.
Screaming.
Otherwise, we're like...
Exactly. So if they scream loud enough, that's when we start to pause and go, oh my gosh, what's going on? And and first we have resistance and we have fight and we're angry and it's not fair and oh my gosh, it's disrupting my life. But then we get to a place because we realize we got to heal. Okay, what is going on? What has happened in my life? Past, present, what is all this? Because my brain is taking all of it into account at all times. You know, it's interesting because just to circle... And especially when I talk at medical conferences, I share this, you know, the Socratic method, right? That's the oath. Well, Socrates said, it's more important to know the person who has the disease than the disease they have.
Mm.
So we...
That should be at the root of everything.
If you look at where medicine started, right? Even back then, it was, yeah, we're mortal, we're humans, things happen to us, but the magnitude to which they do or stay chronic or continue or repeat, let's look at the person.
Yeah.
Because we are spiritual beings having a human experience first and foremost. And when there's disconnect, when there's trauma, when there's blockages, when we're going to have breakdown from that actual loving place of, this is going to get to worse breakdown if we don't do something now. So you're busy, you're distracted. I've got to start putting off enough alarm signals to make you pause and maybe make time for you and start to heal what's happening inside so that you can actually live your life instead of manage it and just go, 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 and just keep fighting and surviving. Like, isn't that one of the most common phrases? Like, right. Hey, how are you doing? I'm surviving.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, it's so easy to get, I think because of things like social media, you know, there's availability to some sort of stimulus 24 hours a day. Like, what do most people do when they wake up? Check everything. Yeah. And I remember when my work back in the day gave me a laptop so I would use it at home because I didn't work in an office. And then they gave us a BlackBerry. And I'm like, this is so convenient.
Right.
And little did I know, I was being like captured more and more. I used to sit on Sundays and do my expenses and watch like a movie with a friend. And I remember just like when that, and then I'd shut it off and I'd go to bed and I'd wake up and check my email, but that was like it. There was no, and it's so different now. Like the nervous system is not wired. Oh. So we have to build in layers.
There's no quiet.
Right. And the greatest gift we can give ourselves, because so much of our challenges in life are, we're trying to solve with logic and language. And there is 100% value to that. And because think about how much of your healing was through the mind.
That's right.
But ultimately, you were actually working with the body and the mind.
Exactly.
You just didn't know it.
And the unconscious mind, right?
Yeah.
Like that is, again, I couldn't have equated these things by just logically trying to make sense of it because it didn't make sense. And yet it was still my experience, right?
So, yeah.
And just to also give people just some hope, the brain, every time we switch a task, it requires a lot of neural energy. So if we think of how many times we're checking our phone and then doing this and then checking our phone and then doing this, our brain is exhausted.
Yeah, we're not multitaskers. That's such a lie.
No.
We're fast.
You can with the cost switching. Of a lot of, neural switching happening. Yeah. So the brain is so amazing and can do things in a nanosecond. But even if you just look at why we're so tired, why our brain is so tired, why we can't focus, because our brain's expenditure, what we are asking of it, is unlike any time in history. If we look at how much we check our phones or then go do this and then throughout a day, like just go to the bathroom without your phone. Like that's a good place to start.
Get your report.
Right?
Your report is like, you could be a better person.
Yes.
You know, you could have another job.
Yeah. Your brain is tired just from the life we live today. There is a way we all have to be conscious of it. But also, I just know, and I've seen it, and I think of two, no one is too far broken if they're willing to do the work. Like, because I don't care. I've had 84-year-old client. Talk about establishing neural pathways.
Right.
You know, they had many decades to reaffirm themselves.
Man.
It's never, and that, again, whatever you believe, that is the greatest grace
we are given.
We truly can.
We are elder millennials.
We are.
Someone called me that and I'm like, isn't that middle aged?
Own it. You know?
Yeah.
It's the new 20.
I got more gray in my beard now. It's better.
It's distinguished.
Yeah, that's what we'll go
with. It's the wisdom of
earned.
Life.
It's earned. The crow's feet, all of it. I take it. No, don't get rid of it. I want it all.
Now, I got asked about that. I'm like, I've smiled a lot through a lot of pain.
Isn't that such a great thing?
I want those there.
Yeah, you earned them. That's what moves like the man and the woman through the archetypal journey to them be an elder is like, you know, I think a lot about like when we reject aging, we reject the wisdom that's inherent with aging. So you actually reject the very thing that's trying to gift you transformation and help others. This has been bananas in the best way. And like, holy moly, you have been through all of it and you've turned it into a gift for others. And man, just to acknowledge you for like your resilience, even your surrender was a deepening, you know?
Yeah. It's harder to surrender than to control, right?
Right.
Even in my journey,
like met the moment.
I had to surrender to the timeline and the process, right? Because we all want to control when it happens. So surrendering, that was one of the greatest lessons of my life. And it really was, I thought it was weakness, right? I thought it meant giving up, but it was fighting from a place of faith instead of fighting from a place of fear.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like instead of trying to move to positivity or to the whatever, which is great, optimism. Yeah. But it's actually allowing yourself a deepening, you know, through the rage, through the grief, through the, and man, look at what you discovered. It's like divinely through the some very earned moments.
There has been a cost,
yeah.
But there's a great reward. I'm sure you would say this to anyone. It's a deep honor to work with people and walk that path with them. And I know the potential that we all have to heal and change and truly live freer, right? I actually don't wear a lot of jewelry, but there's this because it says free on it. And it's funny, I used to wear this and it said fighter on it.
Oh, wow.
Because that's who I was, right? And that's who I was to everybody. Oh, my gosh, Ashley's a fighter, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I remember I was like, listen, I love the fight or flight mechanisms in the nervous system. They're life-saving.
They're normal,
I think they get villainized, but they're life-saving. But I just didn't want to live there anymore. And I had to shift my identity from knowing I could fight, and I would if needed. But I didn't need to live there 24 hours a day to be safe, to live my life and somehow not have the next shoe drop around the corner. And that's really what bioemotional healing to me represents, whatever that is to you. It's really getting free from the things in your life, past and present, and future projections that hold you prisoner, from really stepping into who you are and who you were designed to be, if you will, if you can take the things that have hurt you and allow them to transmute to wisdom that then does make it worth it, right? Like, I'd never want to do anything I've ever done again, ever. Knock on wood, done it twice. Thank you very much. Good to go. Never want to relive it. But at the end of the day, like when we talk about wisdom and I look at my life, like I'm so grateful for the tremendous experiences I've had in my life. But the one thing that I cherish above all else is who I am and what I've learned. And all of us have that, comes at a cost, but it is, I think, one of the greatest senses of purpose then to our life and the things that don't make sense, the things that aren't fair, but they become ours and we get to then say, okay, now I get to stand in this and operate from a place of wisdom and love instead of fear and anger. And that is how we benefit everybody in our community, in our work. And it is hard, but what's the alternative?
Right.
I'm like, we can keep fighting what we don't want. It's just effort we know, but let's take that effort and start moving towards what you do. And yeah, it might take some time, but like time goes so fast and it is a gift to be here. When you say getting old, when I was told I'd die at 13, like I'm 41 years old. I've never been a woman who shies from my age, or nor will I, because I'm like, I've lived 28 years longer every year. I'm not saying I love new wrinkles or all the things, but it's such a gift.
It really is.
To continue to have the chance to live this life, to become better, to love more, to connect more. And it's a hard life and it's a beautiful life. And they're both part of the contrast that really makes it worthwhile.
Amen. Thank you. I'm curious for everyone listening.
Yes.
Where can they get more of the magic?
Yes. My website, which I link here, is my name. AshleyDLello.com. I've got a free training on the brain there, a brain body blueprint that you can start integrating. And then, you know, if you're like, I got to dive in, I got to change this. Bioemotional healing is a 12-week process. It truly is tremendous what we can do in a time frame when we have the right process and tools, as I know you know. And you can schedule a free consult there, which I will talk with you personally because it is in-depth work and I want to make sure this is a right fit. And I just want to offer anybody here a discount, and I'll tell you why. Like inflation, first of all. But people are so sick, like, and struggling more than ever. Definitely the election year in the U.S. hasn't helped that, but more than ever. And people are doing all the things, but the nervous system is that anchor.
Right. It's the
that
thing.
is just holding them, and they're getting more and more exhausted. And anyone listening who comes through you, I just want to offer a great discount. You just tell me you came from Mark, because I really honor you and your work and your audience and your authenticity. So I have no doubt anyone who comes through you is someone more often than not that I would love to work with. And I just want people to get well. Our world needs it, like, more than ever.
Amen. What a gift to give to yourself. So thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.